Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Jill Robbins and John Russell. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Jill Robbins.
Stay-at-home orders aimed at slowing the spread of the coronavirus have made it impossible for millions of women in Africa, Asia, and elsewhere to get birth control. The women have no idea when they will be permitted to go out again, to get access to birth control, or other reproductive health needs. With population movements restricted across the world, women are being forced to lock down their uterus, Abibi Shibru told the Associated Press. He is the Zimbabwe country director for Marie Stopes International, an organization that helps women learn about birth control. But there is no way in a rural area, he added. 18 countries in Africa have national stay-at-home orders. The Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports. All but important workers, or those seeking food or health care, must stay home for weeks, maybe longer. Rwanda was the first country in sub-Saharan Africa to put such an order in place. It has extended it for 2 weeks, a sign of possible things to come. Even where birth control remains available, many women fear going out and being beaten by security forces and accused of breaking the rules. Also, services that help rural women have mostly stopped traveling to avoid spreading the virus from one community to another. The International Planned Parenthood Federation says in a new report that more than 20% of its small medical stations around the world have closed because of the pandemic and restrictions. More than 5,000 mobile medical stations across 64 countries have closed. Most are in South Asia and Africa, but Latin America and Europe have seen hundreds of closures as well. From Pakistan to Germany to Colombia, IPPF members say they have decreased services such as HIV testing and trips to investigate gender-based violence reports. Many countries also have a shortage of birth control medication and devices. They have needs that cannot wait, IPP Director General Alvaro Bermejo said of women in a statement. He asked national governments to help provide birth control to women. In Europe, 100 non-governmental groups have called on governments to make some reproductive health services available during the pandemic. The French government said last month that pharmacies could take birth control medication to women unable to see a doctor when ordered to stay at home. The result is predicted to produce a baby boom of population growth in Africa. Some experts have said they believe Africa's 1.3 billion population could increase 100% by 2050. In Zimbabwe last year, Marie Stopes gave more than 400,000 women family planning services, Abibi Shibru said. That included preventing nearly 50,000 unsafe abortions. But now, the organization's services for rural women have stopped. even at the few small medical stations still open, the number of visitors has dropped by 70%. Future Gwena works with people in the community for Marie Stopes. She told the AP the situation leaves many men and women trapped inside their homes with little to do. Husband and wife, what else can they be doing in that house? She asks. I think we're going to have a lot of pregnancies. Most will result in unsafe abortions. Violence. Another problem has been virus-related shutdowns in countries that manufacture birth control. This has led to supply shortages across Africa. Birth control devices and medication were supposed to come today to service for the coming 6 months, Shibru said, but the arrivals were canceled. In Uganda, Marie Stopes' country director, Carol Sakimpi, said, it is not known when emergency birth control devices and medication sent from India will arrive. There have been no new shipments for a month. I'm Jill Robbins.
In recent months, health experts have released many statements on the new coronavirus that was first identified in China. These statements often include suggestions on how people can slow the spread of the virus. Today on Everyday Grammar, we will explore the grammar behind some of this advice. Specifically, we will examine public health videos from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC. The CDC is the top public health protection agency in the United States. Nancy Messonnier is the director of the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases at the CDC. She also is an expert on vaccines. In one video, she offers the following advice.
The best way to protect yourself from 2019 novel coronavirus is to avoid being exposed to the virus.
In this statement, Messonnier is using an important sentence pattern for giving advice. Her sentence begins with the words, the best way to. In an earlier Everyday Grammar program, we explained that some nouns, such as the word way, are often followed by an infinitive. These infinitives act like nouns in the sentence. When Messonnier said, the best way to protect yourself, she used the infinitive, to protect, after the word way. Note that she then used the verb be and another infinitive. The basic pattern is as follows. The best way plus infinitive plus be verb plus infinitive. This is a common pattern for giving and asking for advice. It is useful in many situations, not just on health-related issues. Here is an example about those of you studying English.
What is the best way to learn English?
The best way to learn English is to practice every day.
Here is another example. Imagine yourself on vacation. You ask someone for directions.
What is the best way to get to the airport?
The best way to get to the airport is to take the train.
Now, here is part of another video from the Centers for Disease Control. In it, The CDC's Tom Chiller talks about ways to prevent the spread of the novel coronavirus.
Here are some things you should do. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Take extra measures to put distance between yourself and others. Avoid close contact with people who are sick.
Let us look at verbs that Chiller used. Notice Chiller used the modal verb should. Should is a modal that, in the words of grammar expert Betty Azar, expresses advisability. In other words, should tells another person that you are advising them to do something. There are several modals that express advisability in English. They include should, ought to, and had better. Chiller could have replaced should with the words ought to. They are similar in meaning. But should is more common. Had better also expresses advisability, but it has a different meaning than should and ought to. Had better suggests bad consequences if an action is not taken. In some cases, it can have a commanding, more threatening quality. If you would like to learn more about modals, read our everyday grammar story called You Had Better Learn Modals. You can find it on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Let's think about some of the other words Chiller said.
Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Take extra measures to put distance between yourself and others. Avoid close contact with people who are sick.
When offering advice, Chiller made several kinds of imperative statements. The imperative, a kind of mood, is made from the base form of the main verb. The subject of the sentence, you, is left out. Chiller could have given the same advice using the modal should. For example, he could have said, you should wash your hands often. But if you remember the video we listened to, Chiller already said, here are some things you should do. He did not use the word should again because he already said it. Chiller's advice is another useful pattern for English learners. You could use it to give advice in any number of ways. For example, if someone had asked you how to improve their English, you could say,
here are some things you should do to improve your English. Practice speaking every day. Write down new words. Test yourself on words and grammar.
Let's end this report with an idea for you. The best way to learn new information is to practice using it. Try writing some suggestions by using the patterns we explored. You can write us in the website's comments section. In the future, try looking for other kinds of patterns on the internet, in books and movies. Over time, you will notice that giving advice in English is not too difficult. And that's Everyday Grammar. I'm John Russell.
Are you at risk of getting seriously ill from the new coronavirus? Here are some things to keep in mind. 80% of coronavirus cases are mild. Young and healthy people are at low risk. Other people and those with serious health conditions have a greater risk of serious illness or even death. If you have a cough, fever, and difficulty breathing, contact a doctor and stay away from other people. For more information, visit the World Health Organization website at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We look back at the presidential election of 1976. When Vice President Gerald Ford became president in 1974, he took office during a crisis. For the first time in American history, a president, Richard Nixon, had resigned. Nixon resigned as a result of the case known as Watergate. It involved the cover-up of illegal activities related to his re-election campaign. Lies about Watergate only added to the mistrust of Americans angry at having been misled about the war in Vietnam. After Vietnam and Watergate, many people no longer believed their public officials. Voters rejected Gerald Ford, a Republican, in the presidential election of 1976. Instead, they chose Jimmy Carter, the candidate of the Democrats. Why? One reason was that Ford had pardoned Nixon. He declared a pardon for any crimes that Nixon might have committed. This made many people angry. Also, he refused requests for federal aid for New York and other cities. Voters may have felt that he was not concerned about the problems of poor people. Others believe that unemployment and inflation defeated Gerald Ford. He was not able to deal effectively with these problems during his short presidency. There was competition for the Republican Party nomination in 1976. Ford's chief opponent was Ronald Reagan, who had just served two terms as governor of California. Democrats thought that voter anger about Watergate would help their party win the White House. 11 Democrats campaigned for the nomination. Two well-known politicians did not campaign, but they said they would serve if no other candidate won the party's support. They were former Vice President Hubert Humphrey and Senator Ted Kennedy. One of the lesser-known candidates was the former governor of Georgia, Jimmy Carter.
My name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president.
Political experts gave him little chance of winning the nomination. Most Democrats did not even know who he was. Before becoming governor, he had been a nuclear power engineer in the Navy and a peanut farmer in Georgia. Again and again, he told people that he was not part of the political establishment in Washington. He also had strong Christian beliefs. This appealed to a lot of voters. Many voters supported Carter in the primary elections leading up to the party's nominating convention. His victory in the Florida primary was especially important. He defeated another politician from the South, Governor George Wallace of Alabama. Jimmy Carter represented what was called the New South. He made it clear that he opposed the ideas of the Old South, like discrimination against blacks. George Wallace spoke of creating a better life for both blacks and whites. Yet he had strongly defended racial separation for most of his political life. Many people remembered pictures of Governor Wallace at the University of Alabama in 1963. The pictures showed him blocking the door to prevent two young blacks from attending the school. The Republican primaries had mixed results for President Ford.
Right now, I predict that the American people are going to say that night, "Jerry, you've done a good job. Keep right on doing it."
For example, in New Hampshire, he won only 51% of the vote. Ronald Reagan won 49%. But in Massachusetts, Ford won twice as many votes as Reagan did. The campaign showed that Reagan was more conservative than Ford. For example, Reagan talked strongly about United States control of the Panama Canal. In his words, "We built it, we paid for it, it's ours, and we are going to keep it." President Carter would later decide differently. Ford, in his campaign speeches, denounced extremism. It was clear that he was talking about his opponent, Ronald Reagan. Ford and Reagan won almost the same amount of support in the Republican primaries. Yet, many delegates at the nominating convention remained undecided. This was a dangerous situation for the Republican Party. Party leaders did not want a fight over undecided votes at the convention. They worried that a lack of unity could damage the party's chances in the general election. The situation was similar for the Democrats. Support for Jimmy Carter increased. But some Democrats who did not like him began to say, "Anybody but Carter." Carter's campaign message was that he did not have ties to special interest groups, that he would be different.
"I see an America that has turned away from scandals and corruption. I see an American president who governs with vigor and with vision and affirmative leadership. A president who is not isolated from our people, but a president who feels your pain and who shares your dreams. I see an America on the move again, united, its wounds healed, an America entering its third century with confidence and competence and compassion, an America that lives up to the majesty of its Constitution and the simple decency of its people. This is my vision of America. I hope you share it, and I hope you will help me fight for it."
Many people liked what they heard. Carter won the Democratic primaries in Georgia, Alabama, and Indiana. The other candidates fell hopelessly behind. At the party convention, he was nominated on the first vote. In his acceptance speech, he repeated the line that he continually used with voters.
"My name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president."
Carter said there was a fear that America's best years were over. He said the nation's best was still to come.
1976 will not be a year of politics as usual. It can be a year of inspiration and hope. And it will be a year of concern, of quiet and sober reassessment of our nation's character and purpose. A year when voters have already confounded the experts. And I guarantee you that it will be the year when we give the government of this country back to the people of this country.
Walter Mondale, A senator from Minnesota became the party's vice presidential candidate. A month before the Republican Party convention, Ronald Reagan made a costly political mistake. He said that if he won the nomination, he would want Senator Richard Schweiker of Pennsylvania as his running mate. Conservatives got angry. Schweiker was a liberal Republican. Some political observers say this is why Reagan lost the nomination to President Ford. Many of the delegates wanted Reagan to then be Ford's running mate, but Reagan was not interested in becoming vice president. Instead, the nominee was Senator Robert Dole of Kansas. Nonetheless, Reagan received a long and enthusiastic response from the convention delegates when Gerald Ford motioned for him to come down and join him at the podium.
If I could just take a moment, I had an assignment the other day. Someone asked me to write a letter for a time capsule that is going to be opened in Los Angeles 100 years from now. We live in a world in which the great powers have poised and aimed at each other horrible missiles of destruction, nuclear weapons that can in a matter of minutes arrive in each other's country and destroy virtually the civilized world we live in. And suddenly it dawned on me, those who would read this letter 100 years from now will know whether those missiles were fired. They will know whether we met our challenge, whether they have the freedoms that we have known up until now will depend on what we do here. Mr. President.
It was a preview of the strong and confident speaking style that would serve Reagan well 4 years later. Indeed, as the future president, Ronald Reagan would be known as the great communicator. The general election campaign started in September 1976. One newspaper said, the campaign left voters feeling sleepy because it was not very interesting. Ford and Carter agreed to debate each other on television. No one had done that since 1960, when Richard Nixon and John Kennedy had several televised debates. Many people thought Ford did a little better than Carter in the first debate. In the second debate, however, President Ford made a mistake. He wrongly suggested that the Soviet Union did not control Eastern Europe.
I don't believe that the Yugoslavians consider themselves dominated by the Soviet Union. I don't believe that the Romanians consider themselves dominated by the Soviet Union. I don't believe that the Poles consider themselves dominated by the Soviet Union. Each of those countries is independent, autonomous. It has its own territorial integrity. And the United States does not concede that those countries are under the domination of the Soviet Union.
Carter responded,
I would like to see Mr. Ford convince the Polish Americans and the Czech Americans and the Hungarian Americans in this country that those countries don't live under the domination and supervision of the Soviet Union behind the Iron Curtain.
The third debate did not have a clear winner. Opinion polls showed that many voters were still undecided. In November, Jimmy Carter won the election. He received 51% of the popular vote. President Ford won 48%. A lot had changed in the 2 years since Jimmy Carter began to receive national attention. Most Americans had never heard of him before. Now, many of those same people had just elected him the 39th President of the United States.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.